it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there, and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Barca Blaugranas podcast. My name is Josh, and we have Nick joining us to lament over the U.S. men's national team at the end of the podcast. But first, we're, of course, going to get into some Barcelona news. Nick, how are we doing today?
Doing good. Feeling a little bit sad without a midweek fixture, but, hanging in there, doing other things in my life.
That's good. I'm glad to hear it. You can watch Ronaldo score 6 goals for in the Saudi League.
Yes.
Let's talk about something that I think neither one of us kind of thought we would be in the position of talking about, and that's Ansu Fati potentially leaving Barcelona. There was some chatter this week, basically from Laporta, basically saying they're never going to sell him unless he asks for it. But we all know who his agent is, and Mr. Mendes isn't going to stand for his star client not being a priority at the club for this long. He clearly isn't a favorite of Xavi when it comes to big games or big matches at this point, unless there's significant injury problems. Do you see a world where he earns that trust before the end of the season? Because I think it feels like if he's not a consistent starter or at least key rotation player by the end of the season, it seems like he's going to be gone, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, and at this point in the season, it's crunch time. So this is not the part of the season where a coach is going to start rotating as much and give as many chances to the players that he doesn't think can help him win trophies. And if at this point Ansu hasn't gotten those minutes, those critical minutes, I'm not sure it's going to happen going forward, unless you stay ready because opportunities do present themselves if there are injuries or anything else that could happen. I think he will play, but whether he's getting the playing time he wants to make him happy at the end of the season is another story altogether. And no, I would say at this point, especially with Rafinha filling in for Dembele, that was an opportunity to give some more minutes to him, and it's not happening. And with this new 4 midfielders, as opposed to playing with the extra forward, that could have been Ansu and Rafinha playing together right now, but Xavi still prefers to go with the extra midfielder now, so he's kind of the odd man out. I do think I would like to see him at the very least get more minutes off the bench and not just in like the 85th minute, coming on a little bit earlier to help the team. I think he does have a lot to offer, and I hope it does happen. But I think because of his situation, like the agent is one thing. I think even if he's just a side character this season, I don't think Ansu Fati would be just ready and willing to give up in Barcelona so soon. And I think that's the good news. I think he really is Barcelona born and bred. And he knows that the season was what it was. He's getting back on his feet. And I think he would be the one. I just have a hard time seeing him wanting to leave.
Jason wrote a good article for the site, just asking the question, like, should Barcelona even consider cashing in? Like, is this the time to perhaps sell high? Because if you think about it, right, he hasn't gotten enough playing time to show if there are, like, significant gaps in his game returning from injury. I think there have been enough flashes to where you still kind of, like, he could still be a star, theoretically. We don't know. Xavi doesn't seem to think so. If you were in Barcelona, you know, you're in Laporta's shoes, do you consider cashing in on a prospect you could make a lot of money for this summer?
I don't know. It depends. Like, I just don't see Barcelona as a selling team in general. So what does selling high even mean when it comes down to Fati? How high would anyone be willing to sell? The team that's always mentioned is Manchester United. And under Erik ten Hag, and especially this last year, they've done a lot without, you know, going out. Well, they spent some good money, and they're willing to spend money, I think. But I don't think they're as crazy as other teams. And they get new ownership coming in. Maybe they'll want to make a big signing like Ansu Fati. But just depends how high. And, you know, Barcelona really needs to get some money in. And they might consider it. I think there's still a lot of things we don't really know behind the scenes about how they make the accounting work. So they might consider it for sure if the price is right. I think anyone will. But at this point, I think there'll be a lot of rumors. And anything can happen. I wouldn't be surprised. But I think at the end of the day, I think the player has to really want it. I mean, look at Frankie de Jong. He really didn't want it. And players have a lot of power. He wanted to stay at the club. So I think it'll say a lot about Ansu Fati and where his mind is at based on how the summer goes and how the rest of the season goes. But yeah, I see ultimately, though, it does matter. Like, does your coach want you? And if Xavi is giving him signals that he doesn't count on him, then maybe that'll be the difference.
The club is coming off pretty dominant win over Sevilla. It's opened up an 8-point gap in La Liga after Real Madrid's loss. What did you take away from the win over Sevilla? Because I find it kind of like, this isn't your Sevilla of old, obviously. They're in 16th place in the league right now. They muster, I think, one shot on goal in the match. They looked just completely overwhelmed. Did you take anything away from it other than Sevilla sucks?
Yeah, I mean, it's not as impressive as a statement win as it would have been in years prior. But, you know, they have a new coach. They're playing slightly better than they were in the beginning of the season. And they still have a lot of good players on that team. So beating Sevilla is always a good thing. And honestly, compared to last season where Barcelona was just dropping points against all the minnows in the league, it's nice to see them comfortably get these wins. And the thing ultimately at this point in the season, that's why they're on top and they have this 8-point cushion, because they're not drawing games like they were last season. I think it's 2 draws and 1 loss they have in the season. Yeah, so it was a really good win.
It's also nice to win a match, not just 1-0 or 2-1 and be like worried till the 91st minute.
Yeah, it took a while for it to break open, but man, everyone just seems to really enjoy playing with each other right now. It's really nice to see a huge, like, Robert Lewandowski be out. And, you know, it was 1-0 victories that got them through, but they found a way to win. And now with Dembélé, I'm like, that he was a, you know, really key component of what was making this attack go. And it's, you know, they have a system and a style of play that's working really well. And yeah, Rafinha is very different to Dembélé, but he stepped in very well, I think, and he's working hard. He's making a difference. And they seem to really enjoy playing with one another. There's a lot of good vibes coming from this team. And that defense, I mean, when you have a goalkeeper and a back four who you are not worried about constantly, you can take more risks going forward. And I think it makes a huge difference. So I think we have to give props to Christensen and Koundé, because with those guys in the back line right now, it gives you so much security. And ultimately, when you win games 1-0, 1-0, it's not because your forwards are the ones getting the job done. It's because you're having a great defensive line that that you can rely on. And that's something that's been different for Barcelona this season.
100%. Only 7 goals given up in the league so far. And that was a question I did want to talk about. The back line has been incredible. I think Jules Koundé has made it clear. He's not, you know, he doesn't love playing right back, but he's been great at right back. And whether, you know, Araujo and Christensen both have looked great at center back, what's your back line of choice for Barcelona right now? Because I think kind of the rotation piece that's been happening, they've been switching up the center backs a little bit, but they seem to really like Araujo at right back. And then they're switching between Jordi and Balde at left back.
Yep.
I know my preference at left back, but I'm curious as to yours.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, I think Balde is definitely the left back of the future, but I saw you published an article that Alba wants to stay and he's willing to reduce his salary in order to do it. And let's be honest, Jordi Alba is still so good. In games where you don't have to worry so much about his defensive responsibilities, nobody can pick out a pass in the final third like Jordi Alba. He's still an incredible player in that respect. But no, Balde is the player of the future. I love a player, I think the football is changing again where you need guys who can dribble. And if we're not going to have that on the left wing, we need that from a fullback who can get forward and break lines down. And Balde is so fun. He's the real deal.
And you mentioned passing in the final third.
The right side too.
Sorry to interrupt, but you mentioned passing in the final third. I think, was it the match against Betis where Balde had the ridiculous run and pass into the final third? Is that the match I'm thinking of? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he can do it too, but he does it differently than Jordi Alba. Yeah. Jordi Alba will just pick the pocket of space and just whip in a perfectly placed ball. And Balde does it like on the run.
It's so weird having the left back position after the years of us talking about who's the left back. They actually, like, it's one of the positions with the most stability right now. Like, so long as Alba doesn't pull a hamstring, like being able to rotate those two is pretty nice.
Yeah. It's really great. Baldy's been around for years now. So the fact even like last year, he didn't get more playing time. I thought he was great even 2 years ago when he first made his debut. But now we have depth all of a sudden. Right fullback is a different question. But it is incredible that we have, Koundé is just a great option right there. And he's the kind of player you just want on the field. I think part of the reason you want him is because him and Araujo have so much swagger and confidence. Like, no offense to Piqué. He has a different type of confidence. He has I'm a pretty boy off the field confidence. But he's not like, he doesn't have that just like warrior spirit that Koundé and Araujo give you. And I love the way he celebrates goals. I know it was like a problem against Sevilla because he wasn't supposed to celebrate that goal against Sevilla being a former team. But so many good vibes coming from this defense. So much like warrior confidence. That really helps out the team. But yeah, I think right back is still something to think about. There's a lot of teams who, if you have a great right winger, you don't need a right fullback going forward as much. And Sergio Roberto is great re-signing if it really is like as low of a salary as they say it is. The question was who is the back four right now? And I think it has to be Koundé, Araujo, Christensen, and Balde with some nice depth behind them. But the thing that is really interesting so Eric Garcia is like nowhere to be seen anymore and how he was playing so much to start the season. But if he's in the lineup, it totally changes the profile of the defense. So I'm not sure if he's one that has a future at Barcelona, not because he's not capable of playing, just because I don't think he fits the new profile they're going for.
Yeah. Let's talk about the attack for a second. Do you like the idea of four midfielders, or do you wish that it was kind of just like an easier replacement in the 4-4-3 for Dembele and Fati would get more minutes, or Torres, or whoever it might be?
Right now, it's definitely working, and it's interesting how fluid it is. It's not just like, oh, put on a fourth midfielder, and we'll just put Gavi in the left wing. How they have this really good, almost without thinking about it, understanding when what Gavi can pop wide, when he's going to come more narrow, when do they allow the left fullback to get forward and occupy the space. So it works really well. And I think the benefit that I like about it is now we're getting to see a guy like Frank Kessié on the field more too, to see what he can do. And at Barcelona, you have so many talented midfielders. It's how you dominate possession, but you also can get more of this kind of very small passing creativity in the final third. That's better than just whipping in crosses all the time. So I think there's advantages to it. But ultimately, if you're still going to play with two forwards, I think players like Ansu and Ferran Torres still have a role in that lineup. I was more concerned about Rafinha fitting in, so it was nice to see that in the last few games. So if it's working, keep riding it. But I think Xavi has to figure out if this is just a short-term fix or whether there's something to it that he can build on for the future.
Yeah, especially with all the matches coming up over the next 2 months. We play Real Madrid 3 times. Few times in the Copa del Rey, 1 time in the league. Obviously, the match against Villarreal this weekend, big top 6 matchup. 2 matches against Manchester United in the next 2 weeks. Things are getting busy. We're not going to chat before the first or the second leg of the Manchester United matches in all likelihood. Who do you like?
Yeah, it's going to be, I really don't know. I think it's a toss up 100%. I think a very well coached team with Erik ten Hag. And I think Xavi has to be ready for that, because I think he's been brilliant sometimes, but I think Xavi's also been naive at times in big games, just not quite getting it right. And I think I would take, from a coaching standpoint, the experience of Erik ten Hag, who's also done very well in the Champions League in the past. He has some pedigree in these knockout tournaments. So I think it's the coaching that'll make the difference. But, you know, they struggled against Leeds on their day. Man United still doing very well, but they're not unbeatable. I mean, Europa League has so many good teams in it. So Barcelona has to be ready. I think that Manchester United will be very happy to not play with the ball. So they'll probably let Barcelona have possession. And, you know, it's going to come down to those little details, being clinical. And then, but I guess at the end of the day, I'm really, you know, confident in Barcelona these days, because once again, I think their defense inspires confidence. And I like their chances.
When this draw first was announced, I think it was probably what, like 3 months ago, like in December at some point is when we figured out the draws. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, a while ago.
I mean, it was kind of like, not like a bum matchup, right? Because Barcelona were still good at that point, but United were still kind of a joke at that point. They had not figured things out. And now you look at it and it's the best team in Spain at the moment and one of the, you know, three, four best clubs in England. And it's happening in the Europa League, right? So it's not as magical, but it's still like getting to watch these two teams line up against each other in pretty good form in whatever competition, exhibition, Europa League, whatever. It's going to be thrilling. And I'm just really excited.
Yeah, they're going to go for it. They both want trophies. These are two clubs that are dying for success in any capacity that they can get it. And it's exciting. You know, Casemiro has been fantastic. Marcus Rashford is like a superstar again. So it's going to be a great game. But at the end of the day, it's going to be a toss-up. And who's ever, I think it's going to come down to coaching. And so Xavi has to get it right. I think we're going to live and die by the decisions he makes in that game.
Let's talk about the Super League. Okay. I don't know if you saw the 10 principal plan that was released for the European Super League. The thing that, of course, jumped out to me was 60 to 80 teams in a multi-divisional competition that would allow for sustainable distribution of revenue. 60 to 80 is insane. Domestic tournaments, which I'm a little bit confused by this part. Participating clubs should remain fully committed to domestic tournaments as they are today. I'm still... Maybe you can help me understand this a little bit. I've reread a lot of this. It's very clear that, you know, the three clubs of Real Madrid, are Barcelona and Juventus are going to need more support to actually make this happen. But I guess I'm a little confused as to how they plan on running a 60 to 80 team league and still do domestic. Like, do they mean like still doing the FA Cup and like the Carabao Cup in England and then the Copa del Rey in Spain? Or do you think like they're trying to keep the domestic leagues going on top of the Super League? Like, is that what they're implying?
I think it's intentionally vague about exactly what they mean by that. Well, I think they do intend for there to be the domestic leagues going, and I think they'll take more than less. I think they really do want to. I think that Javier Tebas called this like a coup d'etat. So this really is supposed to like be a threat to the to La Liga and all the domestic leagues. But a team like Barcelona, I don't think would participate in both. I think maybe they would be able to go back to Spain to the Copa del Rey in tournaments like that. But ultimately, the Super League would stand on its own and they'd have as many games as they want. I think they're saying like vague, like maybe it'll be more of just like a replacement for the Champions League, or maybe it'll be a replacement as like an actual league for like the best teams to play in. Which why in those principles are saying it's still gonna be competitive, it's gonna be open, nobody gets a free pass anymore. And I think it's about, they purposefully try to highlight those principles because they want to be open to whatever format it ends up taking. And that tried to address all the controversy that it had in the last time around. But I think it's vague. I read that as well, and I'm not sure exactly what it means. But maybe it could be either or. But ultimately, I think when you hear Javier Tebas saying, oh, this is a coup, in the long run, they want to take over. And it would mean that Barcelona team and Real Madrid never really play in La Liga. In the short term, maybe it would be different. But in the long run, I think ultimately they would be, the super teams would be done with it.
60 to 80 teams. Like, I'm just like, again, because they're vague with it. What do you like? Do you think they want tiered divisions? Do you think that's idea?
I think that's how I was reading into it. But once again, I think it's just like, let's throw things at the wall and let's see what sticks. So I think it would be like divisions. I'm not sure if it would be like Southern Europe and Northern Europe divisions or how they would do it. Probably think about it. And then you can actually qualify for it maybe from the domestic league. So obviously you would need to have their buy-in, which I don't think they ever will. And then they'd find a way to make divisions out of it and have more teams participating in it, which would make it even more of a threat to the domestic leagues.
I mean, just like thinking about it, I'm guessing they would go off of like club revenue for how they want teams to qualify. So you're going to have like championship teams from England probably getting in before you have like Athletic Bilbao or something like that. Like you have like 25 teams from England, you know, 10 teams from Spain, 10 teams from Germany, 10 teams from France, Italy. And it's just, I don't know. It's kind of mind boggling because if you're throwing them into your divisions, what you're going to have, like Arsenal has a bad year and they get relegated to the second tier Super League. Like, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Well, I mean, ultimately it is. I mean, what's interesting to me is that you have the Super League come out and the ones who are commenting, keeping it alive, you know, are the guys from like La Liga. But without England, there is no Super League, and the Premier League is becoming the Super League. Like, they do not need this. And as long as there's no buy-in from English teams, there's not going to be a Super League. And with the Premier League's growth and just taking off even more right now, I don't see why any English team would ever agree to participate in it. And if that's the case, I think it's a non-starter.
What are your thoughts on, speaking of the Premier League becoming a Super League, what are your thoughts on the City allegations? Do you think that anything is going to come of it other than a slap on the wrist?
I think it could. It seems pretty serious. I don't know. Maybe it'll be not as severe as people think it is. But you could see some kind of points reduction, at least, like the way Juventus has suffered this year. But at the same time, like, the success of Manchester City has really, in the last 10 years, helped, you know, with the success of the Premier League as a whole, being able to attract Pep Guardiola. And you have Pep Guardiola that attracts Jurgen Klopp and all these other good coaches. These aren't coincidences, so you don't really want to punish the thing that's made your league so successful. So I don't think it's going to be as. I think anything can happen. But I have a hard time believing they're going to punish them so much that they're going to be not competitive anymore.
Yeah, like the idea of a relegation is never going to happen. They're not going to relegate Manchester City.
Yeah, and it's I don't know. It's a hard. It's a hard thing to understand because this is how these teams like bring in so much money. That's how they're so successful. That's how they get all these big name players to come in. So on the one hand, you want to have the financial fair play, but on the other hand, this murkiness and this big borderline corruption is what makes them successful. So it's bizarre. Honestly, it's really bizarre.
Yeah.
I'm curious if Pep Guardiola sticks around. That's my big question because big clubs come and go. Maybe Newcastle will be the next big team in England. Maybe Man City will have a fall from grace. But does Pep Guardiola stick around now? And if not, where does he go next? That'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, that's the big question. Because I think that he was quoted a couple years ago as like saying, if they ever lied to me, like I would leave or something like that. But that was the quotes that were coming around. And it definitely seems like he doesn't seem like the type of guy who would be complicit in a multi-tiered financial scheme. He seems to like football too much for that to happen. I will say, I have weirdly found like a level of affection for the players on that team. Have you watched the Manchester City like documentary they put out on YouTube? Have you watched this?
No, I haven't. No, what are you seeing from it? It's good.
I mean, here's the thing. It's pure like PR, right? Like they're not showing anything bad. Like they're like, I'm not getting to see the executive oil money spreadsheets on this documentary that they're publishing. But I will say it has really endeared me to the players. Like I don't understand it. It's really well like produced, but like they're getting into like the personal lives of all these players, and like Phil Foden has like his kid around, like Bernardo Silva makes coffees for him and Riyad Mahrez before every match. Nathan Ake like plays the piano, and it's just like I've weirdly watched them. Nice. And I'm kind of like, oh, they're kind of sweet. And it's like, oh, okay. I mean, the players, you know, might be sweet, but and Pep Guardiola, God bless him, every clip of him And I understand English like isn't his first language, but it seems like the only thing he tells the team over and over again in English is get to the ball, get to the ball, get to the ball, get to the ball, like over and over again, like literally the entire time. And it's just made me like him a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, his ideas are like, they're not that, when you actually like break them down, they're not that complicated. But it's so interesting. Like, I think that's going to be, it's an issue with Barcelona and Madrid too. Like the fact that like all this great social media that Barcelona does too, if it's not in English, that's a problem. The fact that, you know, you reach such a wider audience globally, these Premier League teams, because all this like great content is in English. And in Barcelona's case, if you put it in Catalan, you know, my family's from Barcelona, so I'm not trying to hate on Catalan or Spanish, but it's hard to market that. And
with really money, go watch, there's Spanish ways to do content. Both. That's the thing. Like, you don't have to completely cut out your Spanish audience. Like, you can put equal effort towards both. It just costs money. And Barcelona don't want to spend money right now.
Yeah, that's true. But the players, what's interesting about Barcelona is you go over there and, you know, what is funny, just to bring it up, like this, I think, came out about why did Gavi go over to Dembele and celebrate the goal against Sevilla? And that was so, you see that? He went into the stands and gave Dembele a hug after he scored the goal. And apparently, like, there's this thing, there used to be so many cliques in Barcelona, so the French players always hang out with the French players, and then the Spaniards with the Spaniards, and the Catalans with the Catalans, and the, you know, Brazilian, whatever, so on and so forth. But apparently there's a lot more unity among the players right now, and Dembélé has made a bit of effort to actually, like, create relationships with Gavi and all the Spanish players. So the other thing about it isn't just, like, the marketing and the language, but in Barcelona, like, how you, like, prevent these cliques from forming within the team, and it's really nice to see that the French players, it's not the French clique anymore, and that they're integrating more with the young Spaniards, and that you can see on the field that they actually like each other personally.
That's really cool you brought that up, because I had no idea. But like, yeah, I mean, the thought of if Barcelona put out some sort of documentary like this, it would be awesome. But Xavi's too much of a tight butt to let that happen right now. Like, he's very militaristic with everything that's happening. Like, and here's the thing. If it results in points on the field, like, whatever. But just, like, have an intern walk around with a video camera now and again. Like, even if it's subtitles, I would still watch the crap out of that. Like, there's just no way I wouldn't. It's too interesting.
Yeah.
And I think
that Pep Guardiola likes the camera more than Xavi likes the camera. You need a coach who, like Jose Mourinho, great documentary content, because you need a manager who just loves the camera to be on.
Did you watch the Amazon series when he was at Spurs?
I saw a lot of clips from it, not all the way through, but yeah.
I didn't watch all of it. I just watched a couple episodes. I mean, it was just unbelievable watching him interact with Daniel Levy and watching him interact with what's his face? Why am I blanking? Midfielder, a lot of potential left. Now he stinks. English. Why am I blanking on his name?
Tottenham.
He was great.
Wait. Who was it? Doherty or no?
No. He's English. Like, young. Dude, why can I not think of his name? Hang on. This is bad.
He's a former Tottenham player?
Former Tottenham player. Like, a lot of potential, English, young. Last name, Ali. Why can I not think of his first name? Dele Alli.
Dele Alli.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dele Alli did not seem to like Jose Mourinho in the clips I saw. Okay.
So is that our segue to USMNT? The new coach of the USMNT is going to be Jose Mourinho?
I don't want to talk about that. No, I did have that on our notes, but I'm going to save that.
Okay.
So the Champions League is coming back. And again, we only have a couple more minutes before my Zoom kicks me off. PSG are going to probably be without Messi and Mbappe for the first leg against Bayern Munich, who are now looking unstoppable with João Cancelo, that City inexplicably just gave to them. I would have loved to have seen him at Barcelona. Whatever.
Me too.
What's your thoughts on that matchup now?
It's going to be a good matchup. I think Manchester City absolutely still needs. I'm sorry, not Manchester City. I think it's PSG Bayern Munich, right?
Yeah.
Got to get there. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, they were Man City. Well, Man City's going to have to hope that getting rid of João Cancelo doesn't come back to haunt them. But in that matchup, I probably take, you know, Bayern Munich, because they're just a very stable team when it counts. But I think João Cancelo is a big difference maker. And I'm not sure, like, year after year, if PSG can prove that these guys can come together in these big moments, these big superstars, and get the job done. I feel bad for them. They always have tough matchups. But I think, you know, a big player like that is what you need to spark a little turnaround. And Bayern Munich needed a turnaround because they were struggling a lot in the Bundesliga. And now I think they got what they needed to, you know, exactly the right time to give PSG a good showing. So if I had to put money on it, my money's on Bayern Munich.
Yeah, I mean, to be without Messi and Mbappe for the first leg at home, like, that sucks. That's brutal. Like, yeah. Especially, I don't know if you saw the clip that was going around about PSG's last minute attempt against Marseille in the I can't remember what the French domestic cup is called, but they needed a goal. Yeah. And in the final few minutes, they were just like dinking the ball back and forth to each other. And it just looked pathetic. And they have not looked convincing in the league as of late. And again, things change in a few months, right? Like when this matchup first came out, I was very impressed with PSG. Bayern Munich looked stagnant. And even until a week ago, Bayern Munich looked kind of stagnant. But now with the injuries and Bayern Munich looking great again, I don't know. I'm just really excited for the Champions League to be back and the Europa League to be back. It's great.
Me too. And yeah, PSG just doesn't have a lot of depth. So you're right. Like, now they're in trouble. They don't have a lot of backup wins.
They're in trouble. All right. Well, we'll talk about the U.S. men's national team next time. I'm sure the Barcelona audience are thankful we're not getting into that this time, but I don't care. Nick, yeah. As always, thank you for joining us. Enjoy the European matchups back this week. Enjoy the league this weekend, and we will chat next time.
Sounds good. You as well.